Hello, and welcome to Cheese Flicks with Logan and Andrew, a show where two friends crawl through a river of bad movies and hope to come out clean on the other side.
Welcome to Cheese Flicks, the podcast where Logan and I review the cheesiest movies that we can find. I'm Logan.
And I'm Andrew.
Haha, gotcha. <right. laughs> Just trying to keep you on your toes. So this week on Cheese Flicks, we're going to be talking about Barbarella, which was a recommendation from Vanessa. This is from 1968.
Yep.
Starring Jane Fonda. Mm-hmm. I watched this movie 2 hours ago and I've already forgotten like all the important
it's tough.
So 1968, starring Jane Fonda. Any initial things you wanna say?
I mean, if you haven't seen it, I mean, I don't know. If you haven't seen this, the best thing I can describe it is it reminded me so much of like now I understand what like Austin Powers was making fun of, because this was so like 60s corny. I mean, it had flower power infused into the storyline. It was like, I don't know, it was just so bizarre and weird, and it was definitely during that age of movie making where you could get away with something like this, where the, you know, I guess they were, you know, they were basing, I guess Barbarella was a comic book at first, yeah, or something, but this movie is just ridiculous. The plot is slow, but I mean the set pieces I think were kind of fun and corny. I don't know, again, not being alive in that time era, I don't know like if this was like blowing people away or if it was like people were laughing, yeah, at it, you know.
That's
like
kind of what I was wondering is I kind of wish I could see like, I wish I knew like what is the most popular or the most highly regarded space sci-fi movie from like the late 60s, and kind of compare, because this obviously it's not fair to compare the effects of this movie to, you know, something newer or even something, you know, from 20 or 30 years ago. I mean, this movie is almost 50 years old.
I'm going to assume that it is considered kind of corny and over the top, because I know I did read that this was widely panned when it first came out by like pretty much every major or news company, or anybody that did like movie reviews at the time, thought they pretty much said this was just trash, you know. but it became kind of a cult classic. And I did just look it up, apparently, so probably wasn't great special effects, because also in that same year, 2001 A Space Odyssey came out. So,
oh, okay.
Comparing those two, it's not even close. But I mean, at the same time, it may not have been going for that. I don't know.
Well, this movie, for one, is definitely very visually interesting. Mm-hmm. I definitely felt like I should have been on some kind of psychedelic drugs
to
probably get the most out of it, because I was just shaking my head like, what the hell am I looking at?
Lots of pretty colors. I liked how in the beginning of the movie she's on her shag carpet spaceship. In this outer, I couldn't figure out if this was like supposed to be a window to the outer space, but she had like kind of this viewing screen, and it looked just like bubbly, like colored slime with like bubbles in it. But I wasn't sure if that was supposed to be like what outer space looked like. I don't know. There was a lot of weird, definitely like this was a bad acid trip, or you know, whatever. I don't know. It was very, very psychedelic. But then again, it kind of had that, as soon as, you know, what would the, she's butt naked in like the first 5 minutes of the movie, taking off her spacesuit, and floating in this shag carpet. I mean, wall to wall shag carpet. I mean, you've got shag carpet on the ceiling, the floor, the walls, and this is the interior of her spaceship.
Yeah.
So,
and I love the effect of her quote unquote floating was, I mean, and I actually confirmed it after the fact that when I was watching it, I was like, it clearly is, she's just laying on like a piece of plexiglass and like disrobing with the set behind her. So, and the camera's turned in such a way so it looks like she's floating, but she's not actually like moving around. Like she's stationary. You know, she's not moving side to side or front to back. She's just kind of spinning around on her hips while she's taking this space suit off, which
it looks hilarious. It's like a shiny, sparkly, like sequined almost. And I don't know if it was sequined, but I mean, it was
it looked like it was super bubble, shiny. Like bubble wrapped in like aluminum foil.
Right. And it had like nice colorations to it. I don't know. Obviously this movie was some kind of weird male fantasy kind of thing.
Oh yeah.
But
I read that this movie, I guess, was responsible for Jane Fonda being referred to as a sex kitten.
Oh, really?
Of like just kind of that term and like kind of referring to, I guess, female actresses at the time of like that, I guess. I'm like, well, that makes sense because, you know, throughout this whole movie, she goes, she probably does, 15 different costume changes, and they're all, you know, all made to showcase what she looks like, and then she keeps getting attacked by random things, and every time she gets attacked, her costume gets torn to shreds, causing her to then take off her clothes and change her clothes into something else that's, you know, it's just a parade of, like, revealing outfits. And
that's actually what apparently a lot of the news outlets called it. Like, there was, I think I have it open here, but, like, the, okay, so just to give you what we're going off of, apparently, the Variety noted that it had a flat script with a few silly, funny lines of dialogue, and the cast was not particularly adept at comedy. There was something that, like, actually, like, the New York Times said, and it was just, like, oh, here we go. That the tone of the film as a nasty kind of film, modest to the core, and essentially just a shrewd piece of exploitation. Not jokes. The film, there was humor in the film, but they were not jokes, but hard-breathing, sadistic thrashings, mainly at the expense of Barbarella and of women. The one thing that I did kind of agree with, it looks like they did make a first female, they called it the first female sci-fi stuff, and they said that the Barbarella designs containing in her spaceship, the shaggy golden rugs and the impressionist paintings, are unquestionably female in design compared to today's projectiles. So I'm guessing maybe at the time, like, you know, spaceships were seen as these metal, you know, really laboratory-esque, you know, rockets or, you know, I'm trying to think, like, I'm thinking like Lost in Space, you know, things that are around that time. And this was definitely like a comfortable spaceship, you know, like it wasn't geared towards like, you know, how it's used necessarily and what its functions are. And that's it. This was definitely like it had art and fun colors and shag carpet, and, you know.
Right. So yeah, it starts out with her, you know, kind of taking off this spacesuit to her own theme song.
That's true. The music in this movie was pretty
legit. I did like the music quite a bit. So she gets a message from the president, who is completely unfazed by the fact that she is totally nude. She even says something. It's like, oh, let me go throw something on. She doesn't even seem to care that much. And he's just like, no, we don't have time. So I'm like, well, that's a convenient excuse to
leave
poor girl on the video call. And he informs her that the inventor of the positronic ray has gone missing in a place called Tau City. Is that, if I got that right?
Something like that. Yeah, I think it was Tau Ceti, like CETI.
Okay. And they need, basically, they want her to go use her, and they actually said, like, use your talents to find him, which I thought that was strange, because when I heard the line, it kind of implied, like, you know, use your sexuality and all that. And we'll get to this a little later, I guess. But you find out that the people of Earth are, like, no longer having sex with one another. They've kind of created a new way. Like, they no longer do it for procreation purposes. And they've determined that it's kind of a destructive habit. So they've kind of stopped the practice.
Yeah. And they take, like, pills and then hold hands. And there's, like, a way.
Yeah, it kind of reminded me of Demolition Man. Like, if you remember with Sylvester Stallone and Sandra Bullock, when he's like, yeah, let's do it. And it's like, well, here, we put these helmets on. And he's like, what are you talking about? Put these helmets on. So some kind of similar process to that. But I just thought that was odd. It seemed like he was alluding to using her, like, sexuality as a means to get this guy to come back to Earth. But then you find out later on that they don't really do that.
Yeah. I think she was, I don't know, did they say, because it kind of, she seems almost like a bounty hunter or like a mercenary or something too.
Why is she floating around
in space? Is she an explorer? Is she like, you know, bounty hunter? I don't know. But I guess that's what I kind of assumed, is she was some kind of like bounty hunter that people can call upon to like, hey, I need you to do this and you'll get rewarded, I guess. I don't know. Because yeah, it was just weird. It was like she was on, but then again, I don't think she got like any kind of offering of payment from the president. It was just like, I need you to do this. Maybe was she like a government agent? I don't know.
Yeah, I guess it'd be interesting to see some of the comic books and what kind of backstory there was, if there was some that was left out, you know, because they didn't give a lot of history of who she was or what she did. So she has one of her first costume changes. So she goes from her spacesuit to naked to now wearing like black tights and what I could only describe as like plastic armor.
Yeah.
Because it looked like rigid, but it was clear plastic. She sets her light speed to go to Tal Ceti and then takes a pill and tells her ship to wake her up, I guess, like in a couple days when they get there. I thought it was fun. Did you hear the alarm when the alarm was waking her up?
Like, yeah, wasn't it like, good morning, Barbarella, or something? It was like the most pleasant alarm ever. Also, Becky made a joke about this too, is the fact that like when she goes to lies down to go to sleep, she falls asleep on like this weird plastic cot when her entire ship is made out of shag carpet. Like, why would you choose this like gross, like cold plastic tarp to sleep on and not like, you know, this comfortable rug that you have totally decked your ship out in?
Must be some kind of magic future bed.
Mm.
So she arrives at the planet, and there's some kind of magnetic disturbance, which just kind of disables her autopilot, causing her ship to crash.
Oh, yeah. This is when you see the sparklers. Do you remember that? Like, the ship's computer starts going malfunctioning, and then, to drive this point home, they show a green gel, like a gel green sparkler or whatever, over the camera, and it's just, it looks so bad. I don't know. There's some of the special effects. I'm like, really? That's the best you could do? You know? Like...
Yeah. So she crash lands, and the ship does a little analysis of the atmosphere, and she figures that she can breathe on the planet. So then she changes clothes again. That's like, okay, so you have a pilot's or like a napping outfit, and then a planet exploration outfit.
Yeah, why not?
I guess. So the planet is sort of very like, it's a lot of, it looks like almost like crystal, like white crystal.
Yeah.
When she gets off the ship, the sets kind of reminded me a lot of some of the like planet surfaces in Star Trek, the original series.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's pretty obvious that this is being done on like a soundstage. It just, you know, doesn't look like natural terrain. At least not to me. But and that's when these two girls show up. These two little twin girls.
Yeah, it's weird. And yeah. I don't understand it at all. Because these two little girls show up and they're speaking in a weird language that, you know, is gibberish, I guess. And she has some kind of wrist utility that, I guess, translates their language eventually. But she doesn't get it working before they throw some rock at her head and knock her out. And then attach her to some sort of skiing stingray. What is the thing that they'd use in Alaska? What are those called?
Yeah, it's picture like a dog sled, except instead of a dog, it's a giant stingray, but it's going over land, and it's wide enough for her to stand, having been captured by two young alien girls.
Who are twins, and then like all the kid, and then they take her to this crashed ship where there are more twins, And they don't ever speak to her. They just kind of, like, weirdly, they grin, and it's, like, bad child acting that have, later just like, here, stand here and do this. And they're like, I'm bored.
Yeah, they're all twins. Yeah, actually, and then the twins, all these sets of twins, there's probably like 5 or 6 sets of them, they all bring out these creepy little dolls.
Yeah.
And they set the dolls on the ground. So Barbarella's, like, tied up on these, like, poles. And they set these dolls on the ground. These dolls have, they've painted their eyes solid white, and they have sharp teeth, and they start walking towards her. Now, I don't know if you know this, but there's a couple things that kind of creep me out.
It's just like your worst nightmare.
Like in movies, creepy children, dolls, dolls coming to life, and then like twins. Twins are just weird, like in reality. So like I literally when they had like twins, little children, and dolls, I just wrote down nope, 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 because it gets really weird. These dolls start walking towards her, and then they just start like
chewing on her. Yeah, and they have like metal razor sharp teeth, well, I guess something we should add to in this storyline, Barbarella comes from Earth who no longer, I guess, fight and have no aggression. So she's like super innocent, and throughout like a lot of these adventures she goes on, where she's like, "Oh, you're being violent, weird," like, you know, like, yeah, she doesn't.
I guess that's kind of what I was getting at with the whole like use your skills, because it's like if she doesn't, she even comments like, "What would anyone need a weapon for?" So it's like, what kind of special agent could she be if she's not even like been ever trained how to fight, because that doesn't happen on Earth anymore.
Yeah, who knows? I think you might be onto something, but at the same time, she's rescued eventually, thank goodness.
Yeah, but she's. By somebody who I imagine was probably your favorite character.
God.
Because I know how much you like, you know, furry people.
God. This dude was like a woolly mammoth.
Well, you see, he's this bearded man, and he looks like he's wearing a gorilla suit, but just without the head on.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, his whole body, head to toe, is covered in fur, but he's got a regular human head. And he speaks an alien language that when it gets translated, he's just talking in some kind of accent to her. So he kind of rescues her and explains that he's, I can't remember what they called him, but his job basically is to hunt down these basically feral children once they've gotten to a certain age.
And I think he's called a catchman.
Yeah. So like, I guess they don't keep kids in the city, so they let them all grow up in the wild, like Lord of the Flies style. Which would probably explain the creepy-ass dolls. And then once they get to a certain age, this guy, in all his furry glory, goes out there and catches these kids and then brings them back so they can be assigned some type of job. It's really strange. He offers to take her back to her ship. And he's got this ship. I mean, how would you describe it?
It's like a weird sailboat. I guess like it's a ship
on land,
right? It's a sailboat on land. It has like, what do you call those things? Like sails, basically.
Yeah, because Barbarella says, "Well, there's no wind today." And what's he do?
Well, I don't remember actually. I probably was zoning out at this point for his all I remember is he's like, "I want to be rewarded," but I don't remember how exactly they start going around.
Well, that's once they get in the ship. But so she says that there's no wind blowing. He's like, "Well, we got a fix for that." He flips a switch, and behind the sails of this land sail ship, a giant fan like extends from the back of the ship and then starts spinning, putting wind into the sails.
Oh, well, that's very convenient.
Except the problem with that is where you like you're produced. That's just such a weird way to go about doing things. Like, so you're producing power to power a fan to blow wind into the sails. Why don't you just use the power produced by the fan to turn wheels?
Because that's not cool sci-fi, dude.
All right.
Back in the 60s, they were, you know, smoking a lot and dropping acid, and were like, "Wouldn't it be cool if you had a sailboat that just, like, made its own wind?" And they're like, "Yeah, dude. let's put it in the Barbarella movie. Where...
So, and getting back to what you were saying, is Barbarella says, we'll be able to get you some kind of recompense, some type of payment for your assistance once I complete my mission. And he's pretty much like, well, I got an idea for how you pay me back right now.
Yeah. Welcome to the 60s, everybody. Like, it was like free love, and you could get away with this kind of thing back then. Because, yeah, he pretty much bluntly just goes, well, how about you just have sex with me? And that'll be my payment. And she's like, what do you mean? And then you kind of learn that, I guess, on Earth they don't have sex anymore. And the only people that do or can't afford this magic medicine that makes you have, like, a euphoric experience.
So you actually get to see what that whole process looks like a little bit later. But he talks her into it. And she's like... This was one of the parts that made me laugh. Is she says... she's kind of like, okay, well, if you insist, but I assure you there's no point to doing it like this. And then she just lies on her back.
God.
So then it cuts, it's being like a musical interlude, and then we see the sail ship kind of sailing around in circles.
Yeah. Like, and it's there's like some really like weird, sexy 60s music playing, like, oh love, what are you doing to me? Do-do-do-do. I don't know.
Yeah. I thought it was funny when the furry guy, when he takes off his gorilla costume, he's almost as hairy underneath.
Yeah, and it was just like, it was awkward as hell, because he takes off his fur suit and underneath is yet another fur suit, but it's his.
Yeah, he kind of his whole personality kind of reminded me of like the Most Interesting Man in the World commercials. Yeah,
he did look kind of like that guy. So, yeah, she bangs the guy for payment. I guess we can start talking about the themes of this. I was looking up, like, why this was, you know, written the way it was, and what's the point of making, I don't know, it just seemed kind of weird, like, almost like, hey, let's make a movie where we take advantage of a woman, but it's not like... Apparently this was written so it kind of was supposed to be, I guess, some sort of like in the 60s we had all this like hippie movement with like free love or whatever. And this was like, I think, supposed to be that like sexuality can survive the scientific revolution or something. It's like, so apparently that's what they were trying to go for but failed miserably at doing, because it was supposed to be something along the lines of like, even though in the future when, you know, everything's super advanced, you still need to make love or something. Because that's pretty much what she does to everybody that she
runs into. Right, yeah, because after this first time with the furry guy, her opinion on, like, real-life actual sex does a complete 180. She's like, oh, yeah, that was great.
Yeah. Oh, and then she has another weird change outfit where she now is wearing, like, weird skunk furs or something. It turns into, like, it's like a scarf... like cape thing. I don't know, man. It's the set pieces are what really steal the show in this movie. It's like they spent probably all the budget on that, because the story is garbage in my opinion, and you know, this the acting ain't that great. And but the set pieces are fun, and they don't stop getting fun. Like I really enjoyed it all the way, like the way they kind of did a lot of this stuff all the way to the end, which again I think made me think of like Austin Powers and stuff like that, because it was so over the top. I mean, I think her spaceship has almost like these lung type things that like breathe in almost like balloons, and I'm like, oh, that's kind of interesting. I don't know.
Oh yeah, towards the back. I remember what you're talking about. That was a weird sort of visual effect. So yeah, after that whole thing, the bearded guy allegedly fixes her ship after
5 seconds. I'm just turning it off and on again.
Well, so he drives the ship drives around in circles while they're having sex, and he gets there and he's just like, bing, bang, boom, hey, your ship's fixed, see you later.
And tells her where to find Duran Duran.
Right. But then her ship crashes immediately.
Yeah.
Like, it goes up and then goes straight back down again. It's like, so what was this guy really doing other than just, you know, getting what he wanted from Barbarella and then saying, see you later?
Well, I couldn't tell if that was intentional or not, because doesn't she try to, like, burrow down to the ground?
Is that what she was trying to do? thought she crashed again. I mean, she does crash.
Well, she does, but it's at the same time, it's like, I thought she was burrowing underground to find this dude. Like, she, like, put it, her his location in the in her targeting system or whatever, and it, like, just smashed in the ground. Because he even, like, it burrows this huge tunnel, and then that guy with the beard and the monkey suit is, like, calling her name into this giant tunnel where her ship just burrowed into the ground. So that's why I assumed it was intentional, because it almost seemed like it drowned.
And it could have been. I guess the reason I figured it wasn't intentional was because when she eventually stops, is her ship's broken again.
Right. Yeah. And who knows? It's like one of those things, too, where I don't know if this was supposed to be, again, like her innocence, which is a big theme in this movie, is like, oh, well, you know, I trusted the ship and the computer to get me where I wanted to go, and then it broke down. Oops. No big deal, though. I don't know. But yeah, because when she gets out of her ship in the middle of the planet or wherever she ends up, it's like covered in rubble and doesn't look in, like, it's in good shape. And I don't, yeah, and she has to kind of go out on foot at that point.
Yeah, and so she gets knocked out by a rock slide, and then you see some, like, human feet walking up next to her, and then it's like a guy kind of kneels down. You can't see what he looks like, but his hands just kind of, like, start touching her all over her, like, face and chest. And I was like, what the fuck is going on? And it pans up, and the guy's got angel wings, and you can kind of pick up pretty quick that he's blind, so it's, you know. But still, it's like, okay, if you're blind, you're probably pretty adept at, like, touching people's faces. And if you know where someone's face is, you probably know where their chest is. So why would your hands go like, sorry,
lower?
I'm just a blind guy. So she makes a new friend, this angel guy whose name I didn't write down.
Pygar.
Pygar the blind angel, and he is, like, stuck in this labyrinth with all these other people who have kind of been, like, banished there, I guess.
Yeah, it's a weird place with, like, weird people that are, like, in, like, they're, like, trapped in stone, but they're, like, kissing each other. Then there's, like, that weird scientist guy. What is his name? I can't remember this. But yeah, so I guess the Pygar kind of, she tells Pygar that she wants to out of the labyrinth and to find Duran. I think he's sort of, like, super trusting to her, and he's also willing to, I guess, like, help her get where she wants to go. And It's like they're cast out of the Soga City of Nyapargar. That's who it is, Professor Ping.
Yeah,
that's the weird, like, scientist dude. I guess is gonna fix her ship.
Right. So yeah, he says, like, it's gonna take some time to fix the ship. I don't really know. So the angel guy is gonna help her get to the guy she's looking for. The problem is the angel doesn't fly anymore because he has lost the will to fly.
Yep.
And wouldn't
you know, just gotta believe
the thing that would help him get his will to fly back is sex with Jane Fonda.
Hey, I feel like $1 million. Thanks, Barbarella.
Which I thought that was, so after they end up having sex up in his nest, and as they fly away, the Professor Ping just kind of makes a offhand comment. He just says, interesting therapy.
Yeah. So yeah, great job, Barbarella.
She's getting the hang of this.
Yeah.
So that they get another, like, musical interlude, and you see Barbarella and the angel flying away in search of Duran Duran. This is some pretty awful, I guess, green screen. I don't know if that's what they would have used then or not, but that's kind of the effect, is where the background is clearly not actually there, and they're just, like, on wires. So they land in this city, and this city, they land in, like, kind of a sketchy neighborhood, I guess, because the angel's going to stick out. I don't know why they thought it'd be better to land in the worst part of the neighborhood.
Who cares? Plot is not important in this film.
So they land over there.
They weren't worried about it. It reminded me of Flash Gordon at this point, too. Like the space fight where they're like shooting flashlights at each other.
Oh yeah, yeah, we did skip over that. So there is like the
it's like a hilarious game. Well, the green screen space fight is basically what it is, and you've got these like it's like the same scene they filmed and they just repeated a few times, and there's like flights or lasers and lights being flashed at each other a few times, and but yeah, they succeed in escaping the guards or whatever, and then yeah, they land in a shitty neighborhood basically where I guess they kind of get separated.
Yeah, so they get separated and she kind of gets cornered by two guys who she's pretty much like, well, what do you want? And then you can just yeah, I mean you can tell by the looks on their faces what they want. So it looks like, you know, she's about to be assaulted by these two dudes, and some lady with an eye patch like comes up behind them and kills both of them. And yeah. Kind of starts, it's like, what, kind of flirting with Barbarella, saying, hey, do you want to spend some time with me? Like, I won't, didn't she say something like, I won't charge you or something like that?
Yeah, I'm not really sure. I just know that it was kind of creepy because every time she's like, oh, you're very pretty, pretty.
Oh, yeah, she calls her pretty, pretty, like 4 or 5 times. That's weird. So, yeah, Barbarella kind of is just like, kind of awkward, backs out of that situation. And then she starts hearing screaming. And this was another one of the lines that actually made me laugh. Is she says, screaming, a good many dramatic situations begin with screaming.
Yeah.
Like, I'd be willing to put
what a
money
wonderful
on,
observation.
On that being, like, a direct quote from the comic book. Because I can, like, picture that kind of line
yeah.
in a comic book.
But almost as like a thought bubble. You know, like, why would you
yeah,
say
but
that?
Why would you say it out loud? Exactly. So she runs towards a screaming and finds the angel who's about to be killed by like a mob. And she like jumps in front of him and just like stops him from doing it. They don't even like attack her or do anything to her.
Yeah, these people that in this city seem like they're not all there. Like, they're all kind of in this, like, crazed trance or something. Because they were, like, laughing and clapping their hands. And then one guy was, like, wielding some kind of weapon that he was going to, like, attack Pygar with. But then she stands in front of him and the guy stops. And then she backs into a room and nobody follows them into the room. Because that's where the weird, like, suicide room is.
Right.
Or whatever.
The Chamber of Ultimate Solutions. It sounds like something out
of yeah, like Nazi
like
Germany
yeah,
or something.
Exactly. That sounds like a Hitler thing. So yeah, it's like a suicide chamber. No explanation why does this exist. It's just there.
You'd think there'd be a little bit more like checks and balances, not just a room you can just randomly walk into. Like...
Yeah, you really shouldn't be able to just accidentally stumble into a suicide chamber that you're not supposed to be able to get out of.
Yeah.
But you can't.
Because then, like, this ominous voice starts saying, like, congratulations on choosing to die. Here are some options you can have for an exciting death or something.
Yeah, and you actually see somebody else go through the process ahead of them. It's weird.
Yeah. But then, before they have the chance to see what lies on the other side of the door, I think that's when Duran shows up. Right?
Right. Well,
you don't know it's Duran Duran.
Yeah, you don't know it's Duran Duran yet. He says he's the concierge of the Great Tyrant.
Yeah.
And rescues the two of them. It takes them to someplace.
To see the Black Tyrant.
Yes. And they get the explanation that this planet feeds on evil. So it brings out the worst in people. All I could think of was like, yeah, so this pretty much is the worst possible place for like some ultimate weapon to end up on a planet full of people that just like, because of the makeup of the planet itself are like encouraged to do evil deeds, which...
Yeah. Oh, and you also find out that the Great Tyrant is actually the woman that she ran into earlier, who calls her pretty pretty.
Yeah, the eye patch lady. Yeah. Which all I can think about the evil planet thing is like, is this like Ghostbusters 2? Is that where Ghostbusters got this idea? Like the river of slime that feeds off negative energy?
Oh, maybe. You know, I didn't look into it to see, like, well, I'm sure. I mean, you know, but this movie did influence probably a ton of stuff because it was so weird and bizarre for its time. Apparently, it was only second to The Jungle Book on its release. It made a shitload of money when it first came out, anyway. But yeah, so she meets the black tyrant, who I think changes, who has like this like unicorn thing going on, and yeah, and it's the they're powered by the liquid essence of the Matmos or something. That's kind of like where the power lies, I guess. Again, with the Ghostbusters, you know, there's like a liquid essence of evil, and that's kind of what it is. Is it's like Matmos.
Or something. Yeah, and so the great tyrant, after explaining all this, you find out she has the angel tied up, and Barbarella kind of goes up to him, and then she reaches into his shorts, or his, I don't know, tunic, whatever you want to call it, and pulls out a gun that she had actually put there earlier while they were flying, and she takes the tyrant hostage. Unfortunately, the gun was out of ammo, and the concierge kind of calls out her bluff and says, no, that gun's empty. So they take Barbarella, and they put her in, like, a giant plexiglass room full of birds.
Yeah, and it is hilarious, because she's like, what is she say? This is, what I think, one of my favorite lines in the movie. She's like, well, this is too a poetic way to die, or something. Like, this is too much of a poetic way to die, because it's... She's in a room with no joke, because it's they stop a few times when she's like laying on the ground covered in fake bites, but they're like the parakeets that you get at the pet store, like the green and blue birds, and they're just like sitting on her, like they're just like perched on her, like just hanging out.
Well, at first,
but I guess it was supposed to be scary.
Yeah. Well, at first, yeah, when she's in the room, she's like excited about it. She's like, oh, pretty birds, and then they all start attacking her.
Yet again, these things that are supposed to inspire joy in you are used against you in some terrible way. Except this was just kind of hilarious for me, because I'm like, when was the Birds movie made? I mean, I'm assuming before this, but...
Oh, you mean like Alfred Hitchcock?
Hitchcock's, yeah.
I don't know.
Because I'm like... Because I was like, I wonder if that was like a play on like the Birds movie or something. 1963. Okay. So maybe that was like a homage to that in a way. I don't know. Like, as it was like, what? It was a weird way to kill somebody. But right. She finds a escape tube or something. I don't really know how this activates or she even finds it. But
I don't think she activated it. So yeah, this hole opens up in the floor, and she goes down like a slide, and ends up in this chamber with this guy. And I'm thinking he's the one.
I thought it was. Okay, because his name is Dildano, but I thought his name was Dildo.
We'll just call him Dildo.
I think I wrote him down as Dildo. But he's like the leader of some resistance or something. So she lands in his like little command center, which is just like a bunch of tubes land in or around his like, you know, chamber. And including the one she fell through. Because he gets visited by a few different agents or whatever.
Yeah, and he tries to show her, like, a map of the city and where all his tubes are, but, like, the map doesn't work. And then he's trying to usher out one of his agents, and the door doesn't work. So definitely, like, a very ragtag group of people, you know. Because once he finally gets her alone... You know, it's kind of she kind of gives him the same line that she gave the furry guys. Hey, thanks for helping me out. You know, I'm sure my government would be willing to pay you for this. And then he comes straight back as well. I pretty much know a way you can pay me back right now. So you think you're going to go through this whole cycle again? Except this guy actually wants to have sex the way they do on Earth. He's like, I got some of these sex pills. And I want to do it that way. Barbarella, and she doesn't want to. She's like, no, I'm kind of sold on this new way. Let's do it that way.
But so they pop these pills and then hold their hands together in like a weird...
like a freeze frame high five, like while they're sitting down.
Like they're playing, they're getting ready to play patty cake, but then they stop as soon as they start. And then they do this weird thing, and it's I don't know if this again is just because it's the 60s and, you know, they thought it'd be fun. You know, it's one of those things where it's like, you know, I don't watch a ton of movies from that era, you know, and this definitely gets off the rail. I mean, this movie isn't that serious to begin with, but they start like bouncing their legs up and down, and I guess that's supposed to be like them enjoying what's going on. And then suddenly a new guy appears out of one of the tubes, and they're like, he's kind of taken aback because he doesn't really understand what's happening, and they're in the middle of their weird like human earth sex ritual, and then Barbarella like snaps out of it, and suddenly her hair's all curly, and she's like, you know, there's like a fan blowing on her face, and she's like, woo! And then she's like, oh, hey, how's it going? And he's like, hi. And then she's like, oh, wait a second. And then, because the guy wasn't finished yet, I guess. So then smoke starts coming out of his glove, which I'm like, hey, this is cartoonish at this point. But again, it's like, it's off of a comic, I don't know how much, I've never read the comic, so it's kind of one of those things where I don't know if this was like, if this was this corny. You know, I don't know if the comic book was supposed to be this like goofy or this silly.
Was the smoke supposed to mean like it was going well? Did that mean something was not going well?
Terminal illness?
Yeah. she didn't seem that into it, but then her hair got curled. So I don't know. We don't really know.
Oh, yeah. And then his hair got all weird too. Like all spiky at the end. But, yeah. So after that's all fine, done, he's like, oh, okay, I'm here on a mission. I forget kind of what happens at this point, but I guess he kind of goes back into business mode, but he's kind of like pissed off, like, you interrupted me kind of thing.
Yeah, the one time I have Earth sex. But yeah, so basically they want her to help them with their revolution in exchange for them helping her find Duran Duran. So she goes back up into the city, and more just weird visual stuff. Like there's this like naked lady who's like strung up from the ceiling in like leather.
Yeah.
Like just like leather straps, like holding her. Just bizarre. Like there's no real clear explanation of why. It's just kind of stylistic, I guess. And then she's somehow ends up in this room where these women are like smoking this stuff, and they pass it to her and they tell her that it's the essence of men. And then like, so she does it, and then she ends up in this pleasure torture chamber. It's the only way I could describe it. It's kind of like, if you can almost picture like a sci-fi version of the Iron Lung, you know, her whole body is covered up and her head's popped out.
It's called the Excessive Machine.
Yeah,
they call it. It's like this. I guess it makes her apparently in the original French version, it was called the Orgasmatron.
That makes more sense. So this is supposed to be like pleasuring her, but to the point that it's going to become torturous, and I guess...
And she'll die.
Kill her. And the concierge is the one who's built it and is, like, controlling it. So he's getting, like, really into this.
Yeah, like, it's like a weird, like, montage of her, like, kind of having this, like... She's like, oh, it feels so good. And then she's, like, sweating, and then it pans back to the concierge guy who's like, yeah, take that. And he's like, he's getting all like, it's real rapey and scary looking. It's just weird. Welcome to the 60s. I don't know.
But she breaks it. She's just too much. She's too much for the sex machine or the sex torture machine.
Because then it catches fire it's funny because he starts like freaking out. The way he throws the weirdest temper tantrum. Because he's mad that she broke her machine. He's like, you were too much for the excessive machine. He's like, it couldn't kill you with pleasure. It's like you're too much. You're too much for it. He's like, and then he's like, shame on you. Shame on you for breaking my machine.
Yeah. And then you do find out finally that this is when you find out that the concierge is Duran Duran. And so
who was only supposed to be 25 years old or something at the time? Because you get like this weird like photo, and I guess you kind of find out that he's traded, I guess, his life essence in exchange for knowledge or something.
I think this was probably around the time I started checking out. I couldn't do it anymore.
Yeah, because he's aged 30 years. I think it may be because of that like dark energy or whatever. That's in the, because it's like, you know, because he looks, I mean, the actor is like a 50-year-old man, or older, I don't know, but then he was supposed to be, you know, around Barbarella's age, but then he kind of, you know, says like, hey, you know, I've learned so much, because he's an earthling too, and he's one of the only earthlings, if not the only earthling, on this planet. And now, you know, Barbarella was trying to like, oh, come back with me, I'll save you. But he's like, no, I've learned too much, and I'm gonna use what I've learned to enslave the universe or something. But then and I don't think we talked about this either. But when she was banging the dude from the Resistance, he gave her an invisible key to, I guess, to this chamber of dreams or something.
Where the queen was going to be, or the tyrant.
Yeah, and I guess the tyrant queen lady sleeps in this chamber of dreams where no one can enter, and she is the only one that can be in this chamber of dreams, because it has, like, a secret key, and they have the key now, but I guess she kind of convinces before... I guess originally the concierge or Duran Duran was going to kill her and just be like, because of what you did, I'm going to torture you until you're dead, and I'm going to love every minute of it. But she's like, hey, I can help you get inside this chamber of dreams because I have the key. And he's like, okay... go ahead, I'll follow you. And then he like forces her to get to the Chamber of Dreams. She somehow falls into the thing by dropping the invisible. It's a weird like dance thing, because it legit is like just this invisible key. There's not like a cartoon animation to like, resemble the key. It's like interpretive dance. Like
pantomime. Yeah, they're actually like miming this key, handing it back and forth, so it looks ridiculous.
Yeah, and there's like little weird sound effects of like wind chimes whenever they touch it. It's, yeah. There's some sound effects involved, but that's about it. So she drops the key, opens the door, because I guess that's how you open the door, is you drop the key on the ground. But then she falls in, and there's this treasure chest, where I guess is the key that the queen carries on her, the tyrant, so that she can get out when she's done dreaming. But then Duran Duran runs in, grabs the second and last invisible key, and then runs out and drops it on the ground, so it basically traps both Barbarella and the queen tyrant or whatever trapped in this dream chamber, so that he can now leave and, you know, basically conquer the universe with his positronic ray. And there's a really great scene of him like cackling and being like, I'm going to destroy everything, I'm going to enslave Earth and the universe, I'm going to be the greatest master of all.
Yeah,
so he's kind of crazy with power. Yeah,
So he's using it on like the rebellion who's been attacking. Which I thought it was funny that the guards for the government, I guess, that the leather men or whatever they are, the people in like the big suits, mm-hmm. they're like utterly useless. Every time they get hit with anything, they just explode. Big and tough, you know.
Yeah. Well, they look like knights almost, like big clanking knights of armor almost.
Yeah, but like
one except shot, that when they get hit, they just explode.
Right. So the people were getting zapped into the fourth dimension, and this is I just wrote down what the hell is going on. Like I think I zoned out for a second, and I was just like, I don't know. People were getting zapped, and I don't know which way's up anymore. People were exploding, and the angel guy's back, and I don't know.
It's pure madness, yeah. Well, the evil queen has one last trick up her sleeve, which is basically, I guess, to unleash the Mathmos or whatever into the entire world, basically causing some sort of Armageddon scenario that kills everything.
Yeah, that's I think
including the bad guy. It's like it's kind of like, well, I'm stuck in this thing, but if I release the Mathmos, it'll just engulf the entire planet. Everybody'll die, but we'll be okay. We'll be okay, but at least, you know, he won't escape with the positronic ray. So they do that and activate this kind of like doomsday scenario. But then we find that they're protected on her floating bed because of Barbarella's innocence. And the innocence, I guess, is somehow creates a cocoon around the two of them, so they're protected from the Matmos. While Duran Duran and everybody, I guess pretty much everybody else on the entire planet, is burned alive and dead because, you know, it kind of like just kind of kills everybody in this goop or slime or fire. I don't know. It's kind of a weird, again, you really probably should be dropping ecstasy or something while you're watching this, yeah. Because it is so weird, and it's like you could just tell that whoever made this was just dropping a lot of drugs or whatever the cool kids were doing back in the 60s.
Well, what I thought was weird is, you know, this is, it seems like it's supposed to be science fiction, so these things are kind of supposed to be based in physical reality of some kind, you know. But that's like a, you know, you've got a planet that runs off emotion, and then she is saved in the end by her innocence. You know, that kind of reminded me of, you know, like Harry Potter. Like, the reason he wasn't able to be killed by Voldemort as a baby was because of his mother's love. It's like, these are magical kind of supernatural concepts, and what was kind of portrayed to be like a physical world, not with any type of supernatural stuff going on. You know, you don't have anybody
right
doing magic or having any kind of powers, really. It's just, so it doesn't really seem to fit like in the reality of the rest of the movie, I guess. But it does. So she saves him with her innocence. And then
Pygar's okay too.
Well, no, he's the angel. Like, unconscious. He's unconscious face down, and she tries to resuscitate him by like taking his wings and flapping them around, like flapping them back and forth. Almost got it like
angel. It's like angel CPR. Yeah.
So he wakes up, and then he flies both her and the tyrant back to the ship, which she gets kind of a little hurt over. She's like, why are you flying her back too? I don't remember what his explanation was, but
I think it was an angel has no memory.
Yeah, just okay.
Forgive and forget, that's what angels do, you know.
Yep. So she gets back to her ship and flies away.
Yeah, roll credits.
And that's the movie, folks.
Yeah. So, what'd you think?
I didn't. I mean, overall, a 2 out of 5. I mean, we've definitely seen worse. But so much just didn't make sense. It's slow, which I don't want to pick on it too much for that, because I think a lot of older movies now kind of seem slow just because we're so used to like constant action. You know, it was very visually interesting, but some of it was kind of there just for its own sake and not in a way that made sense in the world.
Yeah.
I didn't know if was this I don't know was this supposed to be serious, was it supposed to be funny? I don't really know. It was just weird.
I'm assuming it was definitely aiming to be more like comedy, sci-fi / romantic. I mean, this definitely felt like one of those, you know, when you're growing up, you hear about, you know, the comic books are in like Playboy or something, you know, like adult themed comics that were made in the 60s. And I mean, I don't know when this comic book was made, but
I think this came out in 68. I think the comic book came out like 63, 64. Like, it was not too long before it.
Okay. But it's like, you know, I'm guessing the whole point of making this was like kind of this like, you know, geared towards dudes who are going to like to see, you know, cartoon boobs, you know, in space. And then the story comes second, you know, to that. And, you know, it definitely felt corny. It was supposed to be fun. I mean, I think that I gave it a 3 out of 5. I thought, you know, it definitely has the set pieces are hilarious. It's definitely slow. It's boring in some parts, but you know, they try to keep it going with interesting set pieces and of course the constant barrage of what's her face half naked or fully naked. It's just a weird time, you know, for film, and I don't think you'll ever see something like this again unless it's done, you know, as like a hipstery art flick kind of thing. It was just that age when you could, you know, movies weren't made to necessarily like make money or whatever, you know. Like I feel like there were like the back in that time period, like you could get away with doing it like just for art. You know, or something, like if you just got the money. Because, I mean, the budget for this was pretty high, though, so I'm guessing they really wanted it. I mean, it was like $9 million or something, which I'm assuming is pretty high.
That's a lot. I mean, Star Wars 10 years later was about $10 million, and that wasn't a big-budget movie, but, you know, it's not small either.
And this did end up becoming, like, a cult classic. A lot of it inspired a lot of people. I mean, like you, like your username right now, Duran Duran, the band, copied their... You know, created their name based off of Dr. Durand Durand. And, you know, like you said, I think earlier, the sex kitten thing came off of this. I'm sure it was, you know, and it fits in with a lot of that, like, again, like the Austin Powers stuff of just this, like, weird, kind of overly sexual action movie. And, I don't, you know, and then James Bond kind of fits in with that in a way too.
Yeah, I mean, I liked it visually. I think if they would have had a more interesting or well-paced story, I would have liked it a lot more. I mean, it was really weird, and I enjoyed that in the beginning, but after a while, I'm just like, all right, you've kind of used up all the weird I can handle in 90 minutes without a whole lot of, like, substance. And I think it is hard to understand... It's hard to know what this would have been like in the context of 1968 and where it fit in with other movies at the time, just because I haven't seen very many like sci-fi movies from that period. But yeah, so overall for me, 2 out of 5.
Yeah. So go watch it if you... I mean, you know, it's got historical... I mean, it's like one of those things where this movie is, I think, you know, cult classic because of how ridiculous it is, but... I invite you to go watch it yourself and make your own judgment for it. But just go in knowing that it's very corny and very backwards in a lot of ways. But it's fun, and it's the set pieces are my favorite part.
Yeah, I mean, it's on Netflix, and I'd say, like, go watch the first 20, 30 minutes. If after that you don't want to keep watching, turn it off because it's not going to get any better.
Right. No harm, no foul.
Yeah.
So. All right, well, are you ready for the next film?
Bring it.
So, don't know anything about this, but saw it and immediately... This is a strict, based off of the name in the title and the picture, but it is...
That's worked out well for us in the past.
Yeah. The movie is Dinosaurs versus Cowboys. And it's on Netflix. I'm going to see if there's a...
Oh, Lord. Oh, Eric Roberts?
Or Cowboys vs. Dinosaurs. Sorry. Cowboys vs. Dinosaurs. It looks... I'm hoping this is going to be back to the wonderful second Wolf cheese Cop flicks. Territory. Or what was the dinosaur... Rock not Dinosaur Island. But yeah.
So. All I know is the top picture on IMDb is a man dual wielding AK-47s.
Yeah, I'm looking at a picture of one of the posters, and it's a cowboy riding a T-Rex like a bull. So, yes.
This looks amazing.
After a mine explosion, dinosaurs emerge from the rubble and terrorize a small western town. Several gunslingers band together to defend their homes and the other residents from the hungry beasts.
It's funny that cowboys. I mean, I guess not that there's not modern day cowboys, but if they have AK-47s, I hear cowboys versus dinosaurs, and I would assume it's like, you know, late 1800s.
Yeah.
All right. Cowboys versus Dinosaurs. I can't wait.
Get ready. All right, well, thanks for joining us on Cheese Flicks. You can hit us up on Twitter at Cheese Flicks. We have a email account at hello@cheeseflicks.com or on Facebook. And Andrew just got a sweet t-shirt.
Yes, as a Christmas gift, I got a Cheese Flicks t-shirt, which I guess you could have too if you want to go make one and buy it.
So yeah, email us at hello or hit us up on any media you want. And if you want a t-shirt, we're more than happy to provide to the fans that need to represent.
How about this? You could, if you send us, I'll figure out how much it is. You can send us the money. Then we'll, if you want to feel like Cheese Flicks gave you the shirt, you know, I'll figure out how much it is. And then I won't even add anything to it. If you want a Cheese Flicks shirt, we will order you a Cheese Flicks shirt.
Sounds awesome. I mean,
for the cost, I'm not going to buy you a Cheese Flicks shirt.
Yeah, so we're not making any money off this.
Cheese Flicks money isn't rolling in like that.
Yeah. So like and subscribe to us on iTunes or wherever you're listening to your podcasts. And thank you to Zencastr for providing this wonderful service of free podcasting software. It's been pretty legit. But anyway, I'm Logan. Or I'm Andrew.
And I'm Logan.
See you next time on Cheese Flicks.
Well, here at last, dear friends, on the shores of the sea, comes the end of our podcast. Go in peace. I will not say, do not weep. Not all tears are evil.